Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to Back to School. We have, I'm Kathy Wells, and this is where learning and liberty meet. We have finished up Bastiat's The Law, and I realized that that wasn't directly related to education, but it really was, because liberty is really tied to everything else. So today, there's so much to cover about what's going on right now culturally. I really want to talk about Second Amendment issues and or Second Amendment rights and sort of gun grabbing that's going around along right now in the federal government and the dualization of the American populace and the way that so many of us are, you know, buying guns and saying, you know, we're never turning our guns in. Like, this is just crazy. And that so many others of us are saying, well, yeah, this is a good idea. I mean, you know, in case you've been living under a rock somewhere, we just had several very prominent shootings. There was one in Aurora, Colorado. And then, of course, the most recent at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Really a devastating, you know, thing for those parents and families. And never do we want to not express sympathy, you know, to all the people who were wounded emotionally or physically during those events. But really, the answer is not, you know, someone hurt someone else with a hammer, let's get rid of all the hammers. And of course, as you know, if you've been watching the news, Piers Morgan seems to be at the center of so much that's going on and has had so many people on his show and talked about this whole Second Amendment thing. He's had Ted Nugent on, he's had Jesse Ventura on, he's had Alex Jones on, he's had all these different people. And really what I see going on that's really disturbing is not the whole gun grabbing thing. I mean, we knew that this government was wanting to do this. Well, of course, all despotic governments want to take guns from people because that's how they get power. And it's very disturbing to them if they can't get power. So that's, of course, part of their goal. But the thing that I see that's so disturbing is not, oh, the government wants our guns. That's not what's disturbing. What's disturbing is I believe, personally, that we're headed for a civil war because, how do I put this? There is, I'll make an analogy. In The Hunger Games, which I just recently saw, which I thought was actually a pretty good movie, because I thought it was very Roman and very American, like what's going on. But in The Hunger Games, these people were pitted against one another for sport to the death. It was very real to them. It's very real to us that we might have our guns taken away. I mean, it's not a joke. It's not a game. I mean, our life is on the line. Our liberty is on the line. And yet, it was for sport. It was set up. The life and death situation was set up for sport, for entertainment, essentially. And that's what's so disturbing to me that I see going on. I see people responding rightly, as they should, that no, you're never going to get our guns and you'll take them over our dead bodies and all this stuff, and talking about civil war. And that is right and good that we shouldn't give up our rights. But what is concerning is that I believe that that's the point. I believe that the powers that be know that reaction is coming and that that's what they want. And that's disturbing, because what do you do? Do you do nothing? Well, of course, that's not the right thing to do. You know, to defend your rights is the right thing to do. Yet you also know if you attempt to do that, you're headed toward a civil war. I just don't like the forced combativeness of it. I don't like the forced polarization and a duality that's coming out of this. It's very disturbing. But that aside, just saying that, let's just talk about the asinine idea that we should confiscate guns from people or ban guns or in any way discourage people from having guns. And it's almost as though, I think I've said this before, I don't like to use the term liberals because they're not liberals. Collectivists and socialists have literally lost the ability to think. There was on our local news, on my internet, I saw the other day that a Dallas church, you know, Dallas, probably an inner city area or a high crime area, is doing a gun buyback to make their area safer because it's the right thing to do. And it's at this point that I just wonder if people are really this stupid or if they're this evil. It's one of the two. So I guess the assumption is that all the criminals are turning in their guns. Like all the drug dealers who, you know, drive around in Mercedes or whatever. They need a, you know, a couple extra bucks, right? So they're going to come turn their guns in, right? No, it's grandma who's living on welfare that's going to come turn the gun in. So she can get 50, 100 bucks in cash to buy some groceries. I see this as very insidious, and I know it just sounds awful because it was a church that was doing. I see it as insidious. I see it as a deliberate weakening of the poor and the impoverished and those who need protection the most. And really, and this is an awful thought, y'all, and I just had this thought, where do you think those guns are going to go? So we're gonna buy your guns back, and then where are they going to go? Are they going to burn them? Are they going to destroy them? Or are they going to turn around and sell them? Who would you sell them to? I don't know. I didn't read what they were going to do with them, or if I did, I don't remember it, but gosh, it's so insidious. You know, I can almost see, and I know this is just awful, I can almost see these people buying these guns back and then turning around and selling them to criminals or to the government, which, you know, is essentially criminal in a lot of ways. So I'm so disturbed by this lack of thoughtfulness, you know, and, you know, gosh, you can look at crime statistics around the world. And it's just so obvious that anywhere you have a gun-free zone is where you have crimes against defenseless people. It's just so asinine. That's the only word I can think of because it's just so just dumb. And I just don't believe any longer that the people who support these things are innocent, that they're just do-gooders. I just don't think that. I think they know what they're doing. Because at this point, to not get it and not know what you're doing is inexcusable. Really, really inexcusable. So it's just so disturbing. I mean, I'm seeing this stuff everywhere. And you know, Joe Biden is coming out and saying, well, we're just using executive action or an executive order. Well, you know, what else is new? But listen, I'm telling you folks, I have a bad feeling about this. I have a feeling that we're not talking about years. I have a feeling we're talking about months. All that it's going to take is for the federal government to try to take one person's guns. One person. And then that's it. It's all over from there. We will be embroiled in a civil war because nobody's going to stand for that. If my family heard of a gun confiscation, it would not go over well. If any gun owner's family heard of the government confiscating people's guns, not registering them, not buying them back, but taking them forcefully by force, it's all over. It's all over from there. We are in full-blown civil war at that point, and that really frightens me. Because, you know, war is hellacious and nobody wants to fight their own countrymen. And we all know that our military and our government, our military and our police, at least the good guys, they wouldn't stand for that. They would go home and defend themselves. So then, of course, we'd be having UN troops coming in, which they're already being trained in the United States. They're already here. We'd have them come in. Listen, this is not far-fetched, and I know it sounds far-fetched, but it's not. I mean, you just have to logically think it through. What would happen? What would happen in the state of Texas if the federal government tried to take one single household's gun? The entire state would be up in arms. It would be a call to arms. And I'm not happy about that, okay? I want to be clear, but I'm afraid it's planned. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm afraid all of this is part of a plan. Now, I'm not going to say that I think the Sandy Hook shooting was planned. I think it could have been. I'm not saying that it wasn't. I mean, I think there's a lot of that that goes on in government. But it, if not, it was at least opportunely used by our federal government to do this. It's used as an excuse because when somebody kills kindergartners, gosh, who's heartless enough to say, we don't care? You know, I mean, people's knee-jerk reaction is just, yeah, let's just take all the guns. That'll solve it. Of course, that won't solve anything. That's asinine. But, oh, I use that word again. So I'm really concerned. Really, really concerned at this point with what's going on in our nation. And, you know, we all should be concerned. And I'm concerned that people aren't concerned. Concerned about that. All right. So moving on into a different topic. This weekend, this coming weekend, this Saturday, we'll be having a practicum, a one-day practicum with our Classical Conversations group in Denton. And I'm very excited. I think one of my best friends and her family are going to come up from Austin, and that's going to be super duper. So I'm so excited about that. But I will be speaking on the history of classical education, and then I will be speaking on phonics instruction. And I will say that since I did my phonics podcast, I probably need to update that and do a second one because I think there were a few things I said inaccurately in there, because as I've gone back over the information, which honestly I haven't looked at in 10 years, probably, no, 8 years or so, I saw that I did a few things wrong in the podcast. So anyway, that is coming up. And also wanted to do an update on the mathematics podcast. You know, I talked a lot about different mathematical concepts and about how, you know, the brain really isn't ready for them. And I have the Blue Dorn said, you know, you can basically jump in at fifth grade math and be fine. And I started doing that this year with my kids. I've been using Raise Arithmetic spottily, but we've really been focusing on math facts over the past year or so. So now that we feel like we've kind of got that under control, I went ahead and jumped back into just showing them algorithms and how to do log division and multiplication. And I'll say it's absolutely true what the Blue Dorn said. There's much less stress over it. It's not a big deal. It's just, oh, okay, this is how I do that. And my 11-year-old has retained it beautifully. I mean, just really jumped right in, understood how to do it, got it, you know, and is doing it. So that's an update on that. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the history of classical education and just go over a little bit. Hey, this can be a way of practicing my speech. But I want to talk about some of the things that I've been reading and looking at, and it's so exciting. And I would have to say the longer I study education and the history of education, the more synthesized it becomes and the more beautiful it becomes, and the understanding just grows. And so what I started doing really is I started just going back over my own materials and actually listening to my own podcast, because, you know, when you get so much information in your head, you have a tendency to forget things. So I really listened to the Leipzig connection again, and that was really cool, reminding me of the Wundtians and the psychological aspect and all that. But I picked up a book from a really good friend of mine who is also a classical educator, and it was by, it's by Caldecott. It's the guy's last name, and I forget his first name. But the book is Beauty for Truth's Sake. And this is a book written by a Catholic educator and pedagogical mind. And it's written about the quadrivium. Now, you may remember in the seven liberal arts, the first three liberal arts are the trivium, which I've taught you about, which are grammar and dialectic or logic state and rhetoric. In the quadrivium, so trivium is three, right? Quadrivium is four, and together three and four, you get the seven liberal arts. And the quadrivium is, let's see if I can remember these, mathematics, geometry, astronomy, and harmony. Yeah, which we could also call music. But harmony includes more than music traditionally, like dancing and playing instruments and poetry. It includes a lot of different things. So this guy, Caldecott, has written this book on the quadrivium. And he really does such a beautiful job of weaving together. And it's very heady and it's very high language. And I don't think if I didn't have an English degree and hadn't read so much literature, I'd probably be a lot lost in it. But, you know, you can make your way through anything if you just keep struggling with it, which is the classical way to read a book anyway. But Anyway, he really does this beautiful job of weaving together the history of classical education with the point of classical education and the people in classical education and sort of all of it really weaving together beautifully. But what he talks about a lot, he starts off talking about Pythagoras. And of course, Pythagoras was a precursor to Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. And Pythagoras really believed in a mathematical order in the universe and beauty in the universe. And really the mind of God sort of being expressed in creation and the universe. And I believe it was Plato who really followed the ideas of Pythagoras. But so Mr. Caldecott in his book starts introducing all these just heady things that I have just never heard of, like Platonic solids and the idea of the tetract, which was a Pythagorean concept, which is really cool, which is an equilateral triangle with made of 10 dots. Like, you know how at Cracker Barrel you play that little game with the jumping pegs? That's what he was dealing with. And the idea that one represents God because it's unity and it's at the top and you have 1, 2, 3, 4. You have 1, 2, 3, 4 in the triangle. Like there's one dot on the top row and the second row has 2 dots. The third row has 3 and the fourth row has 4. Anyway, there's all this symbolism, you know, associated with this. It's really cool. And he starts talking about how all the Platonic solids can be formed from this one, you know, shape, which I started thinking about, and I was like, oh, wow, that's right. And the Platonic solids themselves are really fascinating because they're the only shapes, there are 5 of them, and they're the only 5 shapes that can be fit perfectly within a sphere that have the same equal number of sides and vertices. I think that's right. No, it wouldn't be equal vertices. They all touch. Okay, you can watch YouTube videos on that. It's really cool. And then he starts talking about all kinds of great stuff like the golden ratio, which is phi. I mean, you've heard of pi, right? You know, 3.14 goes on forever. It's an irrational number because it cannot be written as a fraction. You've heard of pi, but there's also phi. This is something I didn't even know about. And he's talking about phi as this golden ratio, and he starts explaining how it appears all over everything and really talks about golden, the golden circle, the golden ratio, and the golden spiral and the golden rectangle. There's all these different goldens. And really, I really encourage you to watch some YouTube videos on the Fibonacci sequence or even mandalas, which are really interesting. And then he starts talking about how all of this has to do with order in the universe and beauty and how God is just put all of this in creation. And it's so neat, you know, when you start realizing that this ratio, this golden ratio from the Fibonacci sequence, which is like 1.618, dot, 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 kind of like pi goes on forever. This is also irrational. It goes on forever. But when you start looking at this ratio, just basically think of a spiraled seashell. You know how it starts in the middle, a little B point, and it goes out and out and out and out. That is the golden spiral. It is from Fibonacci's sequence. It is that exact ratio. And it also occurs in sunflowers. It occurs in a lot of different flowers. It occurs in little bitty curls, tendrils on vines. It occurs in pine cones. It occurs in so many different places. It occurs in cathedrals and the Mona Lisa. And just web designers use this ratio. It's really fascinating that this idea is just everywhere and it's just mind-blowing and you're just reading this and then I started, of course, researching it and watching videos and my mind is just like, what? I can't believe this is crazy. And it really reaffirms to you, if you're having a crisis of faith or you're not sure, okay, God, you know, is he there? I don't know. When you start looking at this, oh, in the double helix in DNA, it occurs too. And it cannot be random. I mean, there's no way you can randomly get everything on the same ratio across the universe. Even galaxies have that ratio. It's nutty. But anyway, if you're questioning your faith or you're not sure about God or is there a God and, you know, who is he? And it's really, I think, God making himself known. And it's really cool, especially for intellectuals who maybe just can't say, okay, well, I just believe the Bible. They're just not at that point. They don't have that level of faith. It's a good place to start for them. okay, let me look at this. Is this something that could even happen on its own? You know, it's really fascinating, and I really recommend looking into those things or reading that book. He also has another one called Beauty and the Word, which is about the Trivium, which I hope to get and read. Oh, what are some other things? Oh, one of the really cool things, and my kids and I watched this on YouTube, and it's amazing. You can take a little metal plate and sprinkle sand all over it and hook it up to a machine that pulses a frequency out, okay, just a frequency. And you've got to look up that video on YouTube. I think it was just frequency sand plate is all I typed in. And it's amazing because, you know, in the book he talks about how music is also mathematical, and it was developed mathematically, and scales are mathematical, and how you can even see the Fibonacci sequence, that golden ratio in some symphonies that were written in the Renaissance period. And anyway, so if you hook up this metal plate to a scale and you run a frequency through it, it makes a pattern in the sand. And I don't mean a pattern like some kind of random sort of looks like a pattern. I mean like a quilt pattern. And every time you change the frequency, the pattern changes to another distinct pattern. It's not like a kid drawing some scribbles. It's not like that. It's a pattern. The most amazing one that I saw was like a bunch of cross hatches, like, you know, lines going horizontally one way and then perpendicular lines crossing them with circles inside of those lines. I kid you not. It was amazing. It's like I said, that looks like a quilt. That's beautiful. It's really neat if you watch the YouTube videos, because you can watch the change, and sometimes it's less than a second. Like as soon as they change the frequency, it immediately switches to a completely different pattern. It's like the sand just pops into a different place. It's really amazing. So there are all these neat things that are out there, and his whole point in this book is that we have divorced all of this divine beauty from the subject matter. So we've basically, when we used to teach all of these things together, it used to be required that you had all the liberal arts before you, quote, majored in anything. Everyone must take all the liberal arts together. So harmony was taught along with all of the rest of it. Geometry, astronomy, all of that was taught all together. And there was no divorcing of one thing from another. There was no division into go to this class. This is where we study this. This is where we study that. It was none of that. It was all taught together. And it was beautiful. And it all pointed to someone who created it with the same mind. And now what we've done is we've, you know, since the space race, so to speak, we've really gotten into science and mathematics, but it's completely divorced from its divinity, from how it manifests in nature. So biologists aren't talking to physicists, aren't talking to chemists, it's everything's very segregated. And it was really neat to me to see the overall picture that we could go back to, just the beauty. And he talks a lot about the beauty of science and math, and that if we would teach children from a young age that, look, this is beautiful, it's proportionate and lovely, but yet it looks chaotic because it's a spiral, so it appeals to both right and left brain, which is another really cool thing about the golden spiral. It appeals to both sides of your brain. And just really neat and interesting stuff. So I would recommend looking into a book about that, videos about that, something about that. And I guess I'll just finish up a little early and put myself to bed. But I'm glad to be back podcasting. I was away for a little while just getting Christmas done and some other things. I would like to say that I've upgraded my podcast to a paid subscription, which means that I have to actually pay for that now. So if you'd like to donate to that, I think I should set up an account for that or something. So if you enjoy the podcast, consider, you know, I think it costs like $90 a year for me to podcast. So a couple of bucks here and there would help offset that cost. At any rate, I think I'm going to close it up for the night, but so happy to be back with you, and I will definitely get some more material. I want to read to you out of John Taylor Gatto's book. I think I've rediscovered that book as I'm doing my research for my speech, and it's The Underground History of American Education, and it's so good. There's so much good information in it, so I really would like to read that, some of the stuff out of there, and discuss it with you next time. All right, well, thanks so much, and I will talk to you soon.